Okay, Advaita Makaranda, and we're actually going to be doing verse 7, but let's start from the beginning. Okay, and just please chant after me. I'll do the first line, next to the second one. Is everybody ready? Marjorie, are you ready? You're okay? Okay, everybody okay. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Mohabdiye Namaha. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Mohabdiye Namaha. Anantananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Anantananda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Ahamasmi Sadabhami Kadachinnahamapriyaha. Ahamasmi Sadabhami Kadachinnahamapriyaha. Pramayvahamatasiddham Satchidanandalakshanam. Pramayvahamatasiddham Satchidanandalakshanam. Mayevodeti chidvyomni Jagadgandharvapattanam. Mayevodeti chidvyomni Jagadgandharvapattanam. Atoham nakatam brahma Sarvajnam sarvakaranam. Atoham nakatam brahma Sarvajnam sarvakaranam. Nasvatah pratyabhijnanat Niramshitvan nachanyataha. Nasvatah pratyabhijnanat Niranchitvan nachanyataha. Nachashriya vinashanme vinashasyadanashriyat. Nachashriya vinashanme vinashasyadanashriyat. Nashosha plosha vikledat chedaschinnapaso mama. Nashosha plosha vikledat chedaschinnapaso mama. Satyairapyanilagnyam vaha shastraikimutakalpitaihi. Satyairapyanilagnyam vaha shastraikimutakalpitaihi. Abharupasya vishwasya Nabhanam basa nidhirvina. Abharupasya vishwasya Bhanam basa nidhirvina. Kadachin navakalpeta Bhachahante na sarvagaha. Kadachin navakalpeta Bhachahante na sarvagaha. Now, this one. I said something wrong in the number 5. It's Shastrahi, the last quarter, and number 5, Shastrahi. Shastra is a weapon. Shastra is the... I think I said Shastra. Shastrahi. Let's do that number 5 again. Nashosha plosha vikleda chedaschinna paso mama. Nashosha plosha vikleda chedaschinna paso mama. Satyairapyani lagnyam baha Shastrai kimuta kalpitaihi. Satyairapyani lagnyam baha Shastrai kimuta kalpitaihi. Now, number 7.
Did you say it wrong?
The first time I think I did.
Really?
Maybe not, but I thought I did, so
okay.
We did it again.
No problem.
So repeat after me. Nahi banad rate sattvam.
Nahi bhanam
rite sattvam. Narte bhanam chito chittaha.
Narte bhanam chito chittaha.
Narte bhanam chito chittaha.
Narte bhanam chito chittaha.
Chitsam bhedopi.
Chitsam bhedopi.
Some bheda. Oops. Should be some bunda. Gosh, I wonder why I got that. That couldn't be a typo. It's supposed to be Sambandha. That's some beta. Maybe that's some version I don't know about, but it doesn't make any sense.
What does beta mean?
Some beta means division. I'm going to look up some beta. I just want to make sure about that. Sorry. I don't know why I have that there. When I'm copying these things, sometimes I'm just by rote just going through and doing it. This has some beta. Why does it have some beta?
You're asking us.
let me check on that. And that's my Sanskrit edition. And I took it out of the Sanskrit edition.
Well, this is not going to screw up the whole vision, is it?
Oh, totally. Some beta means division. Maybe some beta means something I don't... maybe it means the same thing as some bunda. I don't think so, but anyway. Let me just check. When I was looking at the verse this morning, I was using this one. And some bunda is the one that I'm used to. So. Getting closer.
Hey, Edward, have you ever been there? Have you ever been there?
Where?
The Ganga over there?
Yeah, that's Rishikesh.
Is that the ashram?
No, that's Shivananda Ashram. That's on the side of the Ganga where Maharishi had his place. It's on a cliff, looking down. It looked up north. And that's what you see. And if you look straight across, you see Swamiji's little place.
From there, this way.
Yeah.
Okay, can I give you a note here? Sambeda, as I thought, it means breaking, splitting, becoming loose, falling off. But you know what else it means? Union, mixture, combination.
Like
Sambanda. Yeah. And confluence, junction. So that means Sambeda or Sambanda is okay. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, whether we're using, it's going to, probably in his bhasha here, he takes some beta and just says some bandha next to it. Chit some beta. Listen to this. This is the bhasha, you know. So, when in the bhasha, what they usually do is take the Sanskrit term in the verse and then give some synonyms and then discuss it. So he goes, chit some bedaha api, chaitanya sambandaha. Chit is Chaitanya, Sambeda is Sambanda. Okay? Api. What it says. Adhyasa Rate. Chitti Aropitom. Okay. So if you want to make a note, that's Sambanda is okay, it's just another version. And it's actually the version from the Sanskrit. Either one is going to be fine.
So what makes it okay?
Is that the real meaning of Sambeda, besides splitting or breaking apart, is also union and conjunction. In that case, it has the synonym of Sambanda. Okay?
Oh, really?
Yeah. All right, so let's go again. So chit. What was I doing? Was I breaking the sending?
You haven't started.
Oh, yeah, breaking. Chitsambedopi.
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 Nyadhyasad rate.
Nyadhyasad rate.
Tenahamadvayaha.
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 Let's break the sending. Na hi banat rite sattvam. Na rite banam chittaha Achittaha. Chit sambedaha api na adyasat rate tena aham advayaha.
Can you tell that this Sanskrit is not Shankar's Sanskrit? I mean, the style?
No, it's nice and terse, kind of like Shankara.
It is.
Yeah, but Swamiji is very good at making that distinction.
Yeah.
If he's reading something that's been attributed to Shankara,
yeah,
and it's not Shankara, he'll know immediately. Yeah. But this is nice and tight, kind of like Shankara, so I wouldn't be able to tell that it was him or not. I mean, if it was attributed to Shankara, I just would think of the Shankara. Swamiji might be able to tell. But also, the different use of vocabulary. I mean, the Sanskrit vocabulary is so rich, and then over, you know, thousands of years, people, you'll find in one something that's written like in the 12th or 13th century, they might have used words that are not used as often in like in 5th century BC or that type of thing. And if you, the vocabulary is so vast that if you change subject matters, you have to almost learn a new vocabulary. You know, so that's why it's kind of hard to gain real proficiency in Sanskrit, especially in different subject matters. Not because of grammar, but because of the vast vocabulary. Unless you have a really good memory. Okay. So let's look at this. So, nahi. He can just be indeed. Na, not. Ba, not. Fifth case. Rite means without. So it's governing the fifth case. It's an indeclinable, like vina. It's rite. Without bana. Bana means shining. Let's take it as shining or appearing. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. This is that word ba and bana that is used a little differently than we're used to using in English. I'll talk about that in a minute. So without bana, without shining, there is no satvam, na satvam. There is no existence. Nahi ba not rate satvam. So satvam is in the nominative. There is no being, there is no existence without bana, without shining. Na rite banam. There is no banam nominative. Na banam. There is no banam of. Let's see. Yeah. Na banam. There is no banam nominative of a chit. See that chittaha? A chittaha? Mm-hmm. There is no shining of what is not chit. What is not consciousness? Chittaha rate, without consciousness. Take chit in the fifth case.
Could you say that again?
I'm going to have to unfold this, but there is no existence without shining. I have to talk about that for a minute. There is no existence without shining, without appearing. Okay? And there is no bottom of what is a chit, not consciousness, without consciousness. Of what, there is no shining of what is a chit, other than consciousness, without consciousness. Okay, that's what it says so far. Chit sambedaha api. The sambeda, the sambandha, or the union of chit. Na adyasat rite. There is no connection of consciousness or union of consciousness. Adyasat rite. Without adyasa. Without superimposition. There's no chit sambeda api. Api is just, and there's no connection with chit without adyasa, superimposition. Tena, therefore, aham, I am advaya, I am non-dual.
My God.
It's really kind of an amazing verse. Takes a while to get there with this verse.
Yeah.
Everybody get the grammar?
What? Oh.
Okay, repeat it. We'll just chant it a little bit, and we'll get into it. Take some energy to get into this one. Nahi banat rate sattvam. Nahi banat rate sattvam. Narate banam chato chittaha. Narate banam chato chittaha. Chit sambedho pinadhyasat. Chit sambedho pinadhyasat. Rate tena hamadvayaha. Rate tena hamadvayaha. Nahi banat rate sattvam. Nahi banat rate sattvam. Narate banam chato chitaha. Narate banam chato chitaha. Chit sambedho pinadhyasat. Chit sambedho pinadhyasat. Rate tena hamadvayaha. Rate tena hamadvayaha. Let's do it together. Nahi banat rate sattvam. Narate banam chato chitaha. Chit sambedho pinadhyasat. Rate tena hamadvayaha. Okay. First of all, there is nothing in the creation that is self-shining or self-appearing that can be known from its own standpoint, right? That's what banam means. It means it's self-shining. The only thing that's self-shining, that has its own presence, then its own being, is known. Let me put it like that. It's shining, it's appearing, it is known from its own standpoint, is consciousness. Consciousness is what we call aparoksha. It's self-evident. Everything else requires consciousness to be known. It's not shining of its own accord. In order, even the sun is shining with light, but it's not shining with consciousness so that it knows itself, that it's self-luminous like that. It lights up everything as the sun, right? So it's a good drishtanta, it's a good illustration that we use. Right? The sun lights up everything, itself being light. So in fact, we use the sun as an example for this being self-luminous. But the self is self-luminous as light, not as consciousness. So even though it's light and lighting up everything within the dual world, it itself is not lighting up itself as a conscious entity. It itself is not known from its own standpoint. In order to be known, requires consciousness. And so the sun from its own standpoint is illumined. We're conscious of it. See what I mean? Whereas consciousness itself requires nothing. It doesn't require the universe. It doesn't require a mind. It doesn't require sense organs. It doesn't require any type of subject-object relationship. That's what we mean. It is both what we call swata-siddha. Self-siddha means evident. Swata-siddha, it is self-evident. And swaprakashatva, it is self-luminous. These are words for aparoksha. Aparoksha, when we use the term, so I'm talking about self-evident, self-luminous now, and aparoksha. Aparoksha means it is not indirect. When we talk about the means of knowledge that we have available to us, sense perception and also the cognition of vrittis in the mind is a type of pratyeksha. These things are directly, immediately illumined. Right? So if I have a vritti in the mind, that vritti is immediately illumined. It's known directly. If I use my sense organs to perceive an object, any sense organs, those objects are immediately known. Whereas all of the other means of knowledge, like even inference or presumption or shabda, Shabda means testimony. Those are all indirect. It gives indirect knowledge, means the object of the knowledge is not immediately known. Like even, say, for inference, if I see smoke on a hill, I infer the fire. I don't see the fire. If I saw the fire, fire would be directly known to me, right? But I don't see the fire. I see the smoke, and I know that there's an invariable relationship between smoke and fire, right? So if I see smoke, I infer fire, but it's not direct. I'm not actually seeing it. Same with something like postulation. If I wake up in the morning and everything is surrounded with puddles and water, it's wet all over the place with puddles, I will postulate that it rained last night, even though it's sunny out now. But I didn't see the rain last night, so it's not direct. For something to be pratyeksha, it has to be in my directly perceived by me. If it's not directly perceived, it's what we call paroksha. Paroksha means indirect, right? So like the fire is indirect, not directly perceived. The rain, indirect, not directly perceived. If I read a history book, or if I look at an atlas, I understand something about China or something about, you know, what happened in the Middle Ages. But I don't have any direct relationship with that. That's all called paroksha, when you don't have a direct perception of it. The Atma is neither pratyeksha, because you're not perceiving it as an object. Pratyeksha means I directly perceive a thought or emotion in my mind. It's called sakshibhasya. I directly perceive a thought or emotion in my mind, or through my sense perception, I directly perceive it, right? So it's not pratyeksha, because the Atma cannot be objectified to have a subject-object relationship with where I directly see it. But it's also not paroksha. The Atma is not indirect as something that somebody tells you about the Atma, you know, or describes the Atma, or through some type of inference, an invariable relationship, you know that the Atma is there. No, that's not this. It's not paroksha. So it's not pratyeksha, direct, and it's not indirect. That's why we say the self is a paroksha. It's not indirect. Negates, right? In Sanskrit, the will negate the noun. So paroksha means indirect. A paroksha, it's not indirect. What do you mean it's not indirect? Well, it's not away from me. The self is not away from me, and it is consciousness. And so the self doesn't require consciousness to be known. Right, everything else requires consciousness to be known. If you use any of the pramanas from means of knowledge from pratyeksha on, in order for those things to be known, consciousness is required. I supply the consciousness. Right, it's the consciousness that illumines the mind, and then the mind is either directly illumined, like your moods and emotions and things, or your thoughts, or the mind is receiving input from the sense organs and then is directly illumined. Right? But does consciousness itself, which illumines the mind, supplies the consciousness for the mind, does the consciousness itself need something to make it known? We say no, because it is the one and only thing, in fact, that is known by its own swarupa, by its own nature. That's why we say it's aparoksha. It's not indirect, it's not pratyeksha, but it's not away from you to be a paroksha. And so if something is a paroksha, not indirect, then what is that? What do we say that is? It's self-luminous. Swaprakasha. Swaprakashatva. It is self-luminous. Swatasiddha. It is self-evident. Swatasiddha. It's self-evident. Self-shining, self-evident. It doesn't require any type of a pramana or any type of means of knowledge to light it up. That's why for all people, whether you have knowledge, jnanam, you have knowledge, or you're an ajnani in terms of self-knowledge, nobody is an ajnani in terms of their own self-experience as being a conscious, existent being. They're that because the bottom line of yourself is self-evident. I exist, I'm a conscious being. Nobody has to come in and light that up for you, right? In fact, that is what is stable in all of your experience. Like, for instance, you can say, I, a conscious, self-evident being, have all of these experiences. Okay, so that's what they mean by it's swatha siddha, it's self-evident, it's the bottom line, I am a conscious being. Now, then you can say, oh, why do you need knowledge then? Why do you need knowledge? Because the problem is that's all you know about yourself. Uh-huh. I am a conscious, existent being. Uh-huh. But then you could say, but is this me? Am I dependent for my being on this body? Am I a conscious, existent being because of the physical body? Right? Or am I a conscious, existent being, and then I'd be subject to the death of the physical body? Or am I a conscious, existent being because that is the nature? Consciousness and existence belong to the mind, to the transmigrating jiva? Or am I a conscious, existent being which is unique to me and different from all of you and different from the Lord? We don't have any idea. The only thing you know is what we call samanya jnanam. Samanya jnanam. Jnanam is knowledge. Mm-hmm. Samanya means you have the general knowledge, the general aparoksha jnanam of myself as a conscious existent being. But you don't have what we call vishesha jnanam. Vishesha means the particular knowledge of what the conscious existence is. So you don't know whether your consciousness survives death. You don't know that it's actually timeless. You don't know that the consciousness is the very being of the entire creation, that the consciousness which you are is the consciousness that I am, that the consciousness that Ishvara is. This we don't know. That's vishesha jnanam. That has to do with the particular knowledge, the particular nature of consciousness. But that I am a conscious existent being, I do know. I just don't know anything about it. You know? That's why, like, when Nachiketas goes to Yaman, he says, you know, is there anything about me that's free from dharma and adharma? Is there anything about me that survives death? You know, here he is, he's died, and he's talking to Yama, but he says, is there anything, you know, that survives death? Because he's still in a body. He's still in that sukshma sharira, you know. And so he's talking to Yama, is there anything, you know, that's free of all of that, free of dharma, adharma, free of all of these, you know, all of the dwandvas, all of the duality? Because he doesn't know, but he knows that here I am, you know, before you, but will I last? Hear this, I am a conscious being before you, talking to you, asking you, oh Lord Death, because if anybody knows, you'll know. That's what it says. If anybody knows this, you would know. And then Yama says, don't ask me that, it's too complicated. All of the gods ask that. And, yeah. ask for one more boon, another boon. Don't ask for that, it just takes, you know. That's too much. Ask for something else. No, this is my boon. This is what I want to know. Mm. So Yama puts him through all kinds of tests.
Doesn't he offer him kind of goodies?
All the goodies. Yeah. No, I want to know this. This is what I want to know. If anybody can teach me this, it's you. You're the perfect person for it. So Yama can't get Nachiketas to waver. And so then finally says, you're a very good student. I will teach you. Really nice. Okay, so... So now, keeping that in mind, now we're going to make a little jump here. So in all of your experience, the only thing that doesn't require consciousness to be known is consciousness. Everything else requires consciousness in order to be known. Okay? Now, also going into the creation now, there is nothing in the creation that itself, any name and form that we experience, that is bhana. The self is bhana. Bhana means it is self-shining. That's why I use the word shining. It shines of its own accord. It doesn't need anything else to illuminate. Everything else is dependent upon consciousness for its being known. Okay. So now what he says here as he starts out, he says, now to take it from the standpoint of the jiva, initially, he says, without shining, without its being known, it has no existence, right? it has no being. Without it, being self-shining, it has no being. And so we can look at it like this. In reference to the entire creation, just from your standpoint as a jiva, if there's something in the creation which cannot be known, it can't know itself, nothing is self-shining. And take it, you see what I mean? Anything that's objectifiable. From my standpoint, if it's objectifiable, it can be known as long as I have a sense organs or a means of knowledge to illumine it, right? And so, for instance, I have the five sense organs, and then I can have aids to the five sense organs. So say, for instance, there's something in this creation that is, you know, millions of miles away, but it is there, okay? As long as I have a proper instrument, like a telescope or whatever, to get in its vicinity, then it can be known, right? But it to be known, it requires consciousness. If I have something extremely small, it has the capacity to know, to be known, as long as consciousness can shine its light upon it, right? Then it can appear, right? Now, what if something does not have, by its nature, the capacity to be known? It can't be known. You see what I'm saying? It simply can't be known. Does it exist? I'm not saying, you have to understand this, I'm not saying at all that you, as a jiva, can know everything. That's only Ishvara, right? Because, say there's different lokas, or things are too small, or too big, or they're too far away, you know, and we don't have the proper instrumentation, all of this, that's true, that's right. But if the thing is, it can be known, as long as you have a pramana for it, because it is. See what I'm saying? It can be known because it is. But you have to be in the, you have to be close enough to it, you have to have the proper instrumentation. If you have to, what do you want to do, add something to your sense organs to make them more powerful, that type of thing. But the thing is, and so that it can be known, okay? But for it to be known, for it to shine, it requires consciousness. Without consciousness, it isn't. It can't be known. Do you understand? Without the consciousness, it can't be known. It's off the map. Period. Because it's not knowable and it's not shining of its own accord. Now, within the creation, nothing is shining of its own accord. Everything in the creation is known, but it is known either from Ishvara's standpoint or from the jiva standpoint because of consciousness, not because of its own accord. Okay, so now what he's saying is, nahi banat rate satvam. Without shining, without it shining, na satvam, it is not. It doesn't exist. Nahi banat, so without bana, without it shining, satvam, it doesn't exist. Then he says, but without the shining, but there is no bonum, there is no shining of what is not consciousness without chit, without consciousness.
Oh, okay.
Okay? There is no shining of what has no consciousness without consciousness. That's what we've talked about before. Okay? Now he says, the chit sambedaha api, now also, the connection with chit. How can there be a connection of chit, of consciousness, with what is unconscious? What kind of a connection can there be between the conscious and the unconscious? Okay, he says, without a sambandha, with a sambandha of the consciousness, without adhyasa, without superimposition, is not there. In other words, without superimposition, there is no connection with consciousness. Okay? Tena aham advayaha. Therefore, I am non-dual.
Could you say that one more time?
Yeah.
I have to unfold it. We're going to take more than one class on this. This is really a big verse. Kind of, if you get this verse, you're non-dual. I'm not kidding. It's really a good verse.
Let's work on it.
So here it says that sambeda, which means sambandha, a sambandha, connection with consciousness, na adhyas, is not there. There is no connection with consciousness except for adhyasa. Right? The adhyasa gives a connection with consciousness. Therefore, I am non-dual. Okay. There's really, I don't know how much I can do of this. I'll do a lot of it next week.
I'll just give a brief outline.
Okay. Adhyasa. In Shankara's Brahma Sutras, the Brahma Sutra starts with his introduction. An introduction. The introduction is called the Adhyasa Bhasha. It's like three very terse pages on the nature of adhyasa. In that, he says something like, at the very beginning of it, he says, it is not possible for light and dark to come together. It's that impossibility, you know. And yet we bring those two together, right? That's impossible. It's impossible for consciousness and the inert to have any type of relationship, you know? And yet through adhyasa, through superimposition, caused by beginningless ignorance, it is there, even though it isn't possible. So what adhyasa means is the superimposition of one thing on another. And so what we look at here in terms of this physical creation, this creation of our experience, subject-object experience, is that consciousness is superimposed on the world, sat-chit, Brahman, is superimposed on the world, and the world is superimposed on Brahman. From the standpoint of who? From the standpoint of the individual Ajnani. That's why you can say, in reference to this body, what the Ajnani will say is, I am a conscious being, right? I, this body, am a conscious being. So that means that I, the conscious being, am the body, which is itself inert. Inert is not a good word. Which itself is not self-luminous. Physical body is not self-luminous. Inert is a bad word, you know, in the sense that there is nothing really inert. But we can say, in reality, there's nothing really inert. You can say jada. Jada means it's not consciousness. So here, but there's nothing that's not consciousness either. So we can say that from its own standpoint, this body, you know, is illumined. It isn't self-evident, right? But we take the luminary to be that which is illumined, right? So if we take the consciousness which illumines the body to be the body, that is adhyasa. Now, if we take consciousness itself to be the body, and the body itself is not self-luminous, consciousness is self-luminous, the body is not self-luminous, I take myself, the Ajnani, takes the self to be this body, and taking the self to be the body becomes consciousness. Fine so far, the body becomes consciousness. And I become subject to death. I become male or female, at a certain age, all of the attributes of the body, I become all those attributes, and basically I become subject to birth and death. So this is adhyasa, but we call it anyonya adhyasa. Anyonya adhyasa means mutual superimposition, where the attributes of the body are given to the self, and the self is given to the body. So the body becomes a conscious being, and I become the body, right? Now, in knowledge, this thing breaks down into satyamitya, where the body recognizes I am the self, which is true, just like the pot is the clay. This body recognizes I am the self, but then must recognize that the self is free of the body. That's what has to happen, right? So that adhyasa is there, is broken because the self is recognized, the satyamitya replaces that anyonya adhyasa in a sense. So now, if you look at the adhyasa in terms of the clay pot, the pot, you know, the pot says, I am clay. It gains all the attributes of clay, which is true. It's true, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But the pot itself, from its own standpoint, doesn't have any independent reality apart from clay, you know, to be an object worthy of any kind of superimposition, right? Right? But say the pot has a mind. The pot has a mind and it has ajnanam. So the pot takes itself to be separate from the self, you know? In the sense that, no, not like that. The pot takes itself to be the, erase that, I got confused on something. The pot takes itself to be an awareful being, to be awareful clay, takes itself to be clay. But it has no means of knowledge to take the clay to be free of it. There's no means of knowledge for that, right? And so then what happens is it becomes the clay, which is true, half is true. It becomes the clay, but the clay becomes it. That means the clay is subject to being broken. It's, you know, it's subject to losing its pot self, right? And if the pot takes the clay to be dependent on its potness, then it's subject to death. See what I mean? Pot takes the clay to be dependent on the potness. Then if the pot breaks, then from the standpoint of the pot breaks and it dies, then the clay will die, right? Then I will die. My being will die. But it's the same situation here. You as an ajnani, you know, superimpose yourself, your body, mind, sense organs, on your being. And so then you say, you know, I am the conscious being, but then everything about me, you know, is the conscious being, and since I'm subject to change and subject to mortality, the conscious being that I am is subject to change and mortality. That's the adhyasa, you know. So because when you do the superimposition, both sides suffer, right? So in a sense, it's a lose. Well, in this sense, in a way, you can say, well, the body, mind, sense organs, they gain consciousness, but the consciousness they gain is subject to death. You know, it's subject to destruction. It's subject to change from the standpoint of the ignorant body. And so this adhyasa, in this situation, the adhyasa is a very funny adhyasa. It's a satyamitya adhyasa, because just like the clay pot, there is only clay. And here in this situation with this maya upadhi, there is only consciousness, right? But because of the jiva upadhi, there's a superimposition of that consciousness onto the object, right? Like, for instance, here, if we look at just in reference to the world, if I say, you know, that painting, it is known. It is known. It is shining. It is known to me. It's appearing to me, right? Because it's known. It's known. But the knownness actually has nothing to do with the object. That's an adhyasa. The being has nothing to do with the object. The knownness has not. The shining has nothing to do with the object. The shining is consciousness itself, you know? And then that consciousness itself is superimposed on the object, so the object is appearing. We take the object as appearing to me. But the appearingness belongs to the satchit, not to the object. So what being, so when we get into what being is there for the object. Okay? We're going to do part two next week, because
2 weeks from now.
Oh, yeah.
What's happening next week?
Next week, I'm going to be gone Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I'll send out an email to everybody. It's because, and I won't be back till late Sunday night, leaving Friday morning and late Sunday night. I have to do a retreat for our East-West Psychology Department for the new students. So myself and another professor, it's our turn. I have to do it. I have to go up to Harmon Springs and...
Yeah, but you don't have to walk around.
No, it won't be at Harbin Springs. It'll be.
We're going to be in suspense for a long time.
I know, but anyway, that's all right. This verse is hard to do. I've got to do a whole other section to make it work. I can't do it right now.
That was good, though.
That's a good start.
What I can understand is superimposition implies two things, superimposed. But if there's only one thing, how can there be...
Well, because it's the superimposition is between what is satyam and what is mitya. And the one who's in the mitya is doing the superimposition as though there's two things.
Wow.
Yeah. That's right.
So it's going to be hard.
Our prayer.
I won't. Let's do it right now. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.